in partnership with 320 Festival, Adobe Radio, presents Let's Talk, the 320 Conversations, with your host, Scoggs.
Hey, what's up, Adobe? It's Sarah Scoggins. I host Let's Talk with Scoggs here. But I was asked to be a part of this special series highlighting panelists from the 320 Festival. Now, the 320 Festival this year was the first year. It's online, and it was an event created to bring awareness to the importance of mental health, provide resources to our community, and normalize the conversation surrounding all mental health pursuits. So I got a chance to talk to some panelists that were a part of the celebration all weekend long. It was online. And Brian McKenzie is my guest this week, and his panel was The Psyche of Sports. I grew up playing all the sports, so this was really interesting for me to ask him questions about sports and the different mental states and what that can do to someone. And he was so enlightening. I learned so much from him. And the interesting thing that we talked about a lot was breath. And breathing has come up a lot in these conversations as a way to calm your nervous system, calm your mind. And he related breath to sports and our ancestry. And it was just really, he's full of information. So I hope you enjoy this one. So this is the third episode of our special series. So here's Brian McKenzie. Is this Brian?
It is. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm hanging in. It's crazy, but I'm actually feeling really good today because I've had a few other conversations with your fellow panelists for the 320 Festival, and everybody is lovely, and I've just learned so much already, so I'm excited to chat with you.
Well, excellent.
Yeah.
A day of learning.
A day of immense learning. And I was really excited to see that there is a panel about the psyche of sports because growing up, massive emphasis from my parents on playing a sport every season. Like I had to sign up for a team and play a sport. And luckily I loved it and I got so much out of it. So I hadn't even thought about this even being a part of the mental health conversation. So I'm kind of overwhelmed with where to start because I myself, like I said, I played sports my whole life and I've dealt with anxiety and stress and all that sort of stuff. So to begin with, what was your relationship with sports as a kid? And then maybe how did that transition into this becoming like something that you're so passionate about?
I was thrown into a pool at the age of 4 and I took to the water like a fish. And started competitively swimming before I was 5.
Wow.
Because it, not that like a competitive 4-year-old swimmer is an elite swimmer or anything. I just was very, I enjoyed water. So I started swimming and started sports at a very young age because, my mom didn't know exactly what to do with me because of my energy levels.
Yeah, that makes sense. Throw him in the water, see what he does.
At
4 years old, can you do like butterfly? Were you doing backstroke, just freestyle? Like what can a 4-year old, what are they capable of?
I was forced to do the IM, which is every stroke.
Yeah.
And I did it backwards. I remember this vividly. I did it backwards. And so I ended up getting out of the pool halfway in and getting out. And then I never wanted to do it again.
Oh.
And then I had to do it again. And I had to learn anyway. I did all your traditional sports in California where I swam, played water polo. I played soccer, did baseball, but I actually grew up skateboarding. When skateboarding was a crime, BMX riding bikes, I hung out in that kind of culture, but used the traditional sports as a means for kind of like regrouping myself to some degree. So I circled back on that after high school and some college and basically took to the education of what was behind sport or exercise science. and had a fascination with understanding it. And so that's where my background really began in that, in the late 90s.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you've been at this for a while. You've seen all the trends in fitness come and go. So what do you think? I mean, speaking of trends and everything, we're all at the moment, we're all stuck at home in quarantine, and people are making the most of what they have at home to get some movement in. But I'm curious of your, you know, your vantage point of being in this for so long, and, you know, there have been trends. Like, I remember Bowflex machine commercials all over my childhood being shown Bowflex machines, and, Jane Fonda had her, you know, aerobics exercise videos, and then at home fitness became a thing. But what do you think are like the foundation and fundamentals of this sort of stuff that has stayed tried and true throughout all of that?
Simple. So principles dictate everything, and human beings don't like to stick to principles. They like fun, new, exciting things that make it easier or more comfortable for them to do things. So that kind of alienates most human beings in one shape or another, including at the elite level. But I don't mean that totally in that we're screwed. I mean it in that you don't need anything fancy.
Yeah.
You need to understand how your body moves through space. And to do that, you just need to move.
Yeah.
And so if that's getting up off the couch or getting up off the ground, like one of the most fundamental things that you can do to save, like one of the most fundamental things you can do to save your life is learn how to get up off, is continue to learn how to get up off the ground.
Yeah.
And apply that into your elderly years. The moment you can't get off the ground, your life will deteriorate rather quickly and you'll end up dead sooner than later.
Yeah.
There are more people that die of movement related issues there are just as many people that die of movement related issues than that die of disease. And in fact, it's probably where disease sets in, is the inability to move and take care of oneself. So just getting up off of the ground is a basic fundamental thing. So from a movement standpoint, it's like, learn to move your body weight through space. And if you don't think that doing push-ups or pull-ups or squats can make you strong, you don't understand. You should look into leverage and how that works and how to manipulate those things in a much different capacity. The difference between a yogi and a gymnast is sheer strength and power, not flexibility. They're equally flexible, but you've got a gymnast who's actually understanding leverage and power in ways that the yogi doesn't actually apply. And there's nothing wrong with either, right? Yoga can be a very intense thing. And it should be to a large degree, but it's also something that isn't harnessing power, right? And gymnasts use explosive power with body weight.
Yeah.
So, and if you go look at a gymnast's body, you're not going to see a skinny or overweight person. You're going to see somebody who is finely tuned, a finely tuned machine.
Right.
From a physiological point of view, you know, we teach things from breath is the foundation of everything, and understanding breathing and how breathing works. Unfortunately, most of us get lost on this, but understanding the fundamental difference between nose and mouth breathing is paramount. And most people never take into consideration that their nose was actually developed with their respiratory system in mind, and their mouth was designed with their communication and digestive system in mind.
Right.
And indigenous culture, not too far back, our recent ancestors all had perfect teeth and all breathed through their nose most of the time. We don't, because of a de-evolved situation that we've been in, to a more comfortable fad-chasing lifestyle.
Wow. I always knew that, because I've taken a lot of yoga in my life, and they always talk about breathing through your nose, and your nose hairs, you know, pure, you filter the air and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I didn't even realize that we weren't breathing through our mouths always.
Yes.
That's really interesting.
Most people are actually breathing. Yeah. Most people actually breathe through their mouth most of the day. And you know, I mean, nose hair is just one thing. That's one filter. And then there's mucus, which actually is involved in your immune system response. So it launches off a cascade of events, including T cells that set up your immune system. And then you humidify the air through the sinuses, and then you actually use your diaphragm. You engage your diaphragm more, and you get to the end ranges of your lungs when you nasal breathe. Mm. You do not do that when you mouth breathe.
I find that even when I'm overwhelmed, just, you know, sitting, and I'm not a great meditator. Someday, but just breath work, like pranayama breathing, mm-hmm. and just breathing through your nose and mm-hmm. counting up and holding and then elongating your exhales. That alone, what that does for my anxiety, my like those overwhelming feelings that are kind of stirring up, it really does help a lot in those moments.
That's important to note, because that's where most people feel it. Unfortunately, most people don't realize that a breath practice is something that should be going on most of the day.
Yeah.
And the inability, and this is why I said from a fundamental point of view, understanding the difference between nose and mouth breathing is critical, because if you're dealing with anxiety, if you're dealing with high stress, if you're in a situation you're not very keen on or you're enjoying, you can bet that mouth is probably open.
Wow. I need to take more notice of that.
Yeah, there's actually physiological consequences for these things. And your system, the system, you, which, you know, this is the other part of us, is like, you know, we jump into fads, and, you know, you started with that, is we miss the idea that we are actually nature. Mm. We're not a part of nature. We are as much a part of nature as we've ever been. And our system works exactly the same way as the universe actually works. Like it's a universal thing. Our physiology is that communication network of our body, right? And so that's how things operate. And all things in our body, we need to move energy. And the only way we move energy long-term is through utilization of oxygen.
Right.
And the only reason we take a breath is because of carbon dioxide. And this is where people get very confused, because they think they're drawing a breath because of oxygen, but the only breath they drew for oxygen was the first one they took when they came out of the womb.
Oh.
Everything else has largely been a regulation of carbon dioxide, and the ratio of carbon dioxide needs to be optimal in order for oxygen to get used. So when I actually inhale, that oxygen crosses over from my lungs into my capillaries in what are called alveolar sacs, and the oxygen enters the bloodstream. On the opposite end of that, carbon dioxide leaves the bloodstream, and that oxygen goes into what everybody understands as red blood cells. This is also called your hematocrit. Mm. How many red blood cells you have, okay? And so hemoglobin is what's responsible for connecting or magnetizing, these are layman's terms, oxygen to the red blood cell, okay?
Yeah.
But hemoglobin prefers a relationship with carbon dioxide. So in order for that oxygen molecule to come off of the red blood cell, there has to be enough carbon dioxide present. And when we mouth breathe, when we're not working hard enough, when the demand is not there, if we mouth breathe, we're actually offloading. We're not getting rid of oxygen. We're getting rid of carbon dioxide. And so carbon dioxide is what actually knocks that oxygen molecule off. And when we close our mouths, we actually optimize how much carbon dioxide stays in the system. You don't absorb any more oxygen mouth breathing or nasal breathing at submaximal levels.
Brian, you didn't let me down. I knew I was going to learn something. Wow. I mean, I've always known.
Well, I mean, I don't want to confuse, I don't want to overwhelm or confuse people. The simple of this is shut your mouth most of the day when you're stressed out, shut your mouth. I guarantee you your physiology will change. Yeah. It is that this is how we actually change ourselves from a chemistry standpoint. This is how we regulate our pH and inappropriate. So oxygen, too much oxygen is actually a vasoconstrictor. So it constricts the blood vessels. And so we need, so think of those people who are really stressed out, deal with COPD, cardiovascular disease, things like that. Yeah. These are high stress individuals that are actually over breathing and probably mouth breathing in most cases. And thus, if we actually got them to raise their carbon dioxide levels, we now have a vasodilator. So we expand the vasculature and we allow for the oxygen to actually get used.
Wow.
And so we break down these hardened, these arterial plaques, things like that. Now this takes time. It's not like something's going to happen overnight, but these are the things we start to see. You will not see a disease that hasn't had research done with respiration rate attached to it, mm-hmm. where you do not see double, if not triple, the respiration rates of normal breathing.
Wow. I always knew that diaphragmatic breathing was very important, but this just took it to, that was great. I just learned so much. Holy moly. So your panel at the 320 Festival is going to be a lot. So in terms of like the psyche of sports and things, like, do you think when we're younger and we're introduced to sports, there should be more of an emphasis on how we're breathing as we're active?
I would love to see that breathing actually plays a fundamental role in things, as it is the most fundamental thing for life.
Right.
The nutrition industry is a $1 trillion industry. That is like tertiary in terms of needs, meaning it's third in line. How long do you go before you die without eating? 40 days, right? Okay. How long do you go without oxygen?
Oh boy.
You got 11 minutes.
Yeah.
You got 11 minutes, right? And so you'll pass out before then, but you've got 11 minutes till you're actually dead. So our way of thinking about things is what we can supplement, what diet manipulation we can use versus understanding the actual schematics behind all that. And we need oxygen for all of it. We need oxygen in order to process the food that we ingest so that we can break down the covalent bonds with carbon with oxygen, and so that we can move energy. And we've become so distant from this because of all of the cool little things that we like to introduce versus looking at the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. So movement becomes, how does this kid move his body weight through space? How's he breathing?
Yeah.
It turns out they're both connected.
Yeah.
It turns out all movement is based on how well you get oxygen into, or you get air into those lungs.
Yeah.
And when we are in compromised positions, or when we don't move well, it's because there's some sort of compromise that's occurring because we're not actually engaging that diaphragm correctly. Although I don't want to mislead anybody. And this is one of the big problems with inside the breathing movement or even wellness space about diaphragmatic breathing, mm-hmm. is that there's no such thing as non-diaphragmatic breathing. There's actually a disease, I believe, called Odin's curse, where the diaphragm doesn't work. Oh. And the reason it's called Odin's curse is because you die because you don't actually have control. You need something to actually breathe for you.
Wow.
Okay. So we all use our diaphragm. It's just how much. And when we get compromised, we get we compensate through our extremities in order to make up for that stuff, right? Yeah. And so we get this thing what's called blood stealing. And so we actually, our diaphragm works in overdrive. And so we overextend, or we get kyphotic, think rolled forward shoulders, hunched over, right? Mm-hmm. The compensation patterns can move in many different ways, but these are just very simple analogies. Overextended being that kind of stripper butt you see with people,
yes.
Right? Runners get this a lot. That is overextension. If we see that in any case, we know that that person is actually not moving optimally. They're not breathing optimally. Their chemistry isn't regulated optimally.
And you're talking about
go ahead.
Anterior or posterior tilt, like your pelvis.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anterior pelvic tilt, or you get the posterior and you start to get kyphotic and rolled over. So you look at your cycling community, they have a lot of trouble with kyphosis, right? And being rolled forward. Yeah. And so, it's not just relegated to these people. We all have work to do. Like even me, even though I understand all this, like there's constant work that needs to be done. Right. And the idea is that if we actually understood what the fundamentals were with things, we would run into the problems that we do. But then that's why in looking at sports and what I've seen is, even at the highest levels, is that we are so great at suffering that it doesn't matter that we're not optimal. And I've seen so many world champions and professionals and gold medalists that are so good at what they do, but they're still completely unoptimized. They're not using oxygen. They're not breathing well. They're breathing poorly. They've got all of these things they could actually be working on. And this then lends into the psychology of it, where it's literally about points and winning. Mm. And we forget that that is not what the goal is. All, any training goal is the ability to make a better decision. Mm. And that leads to things like winning. Yeah. Right. And so when you see at the most elite levels that, look, Michael Phelps's top sponsor right now is an app for therapists for depression. Yeah. You think it's weird that a guy who's won as many medals as that and done as much as he has at the highest level in the world is struggled really hard with depression?
Yeah.
And for me, it's not shocking at all. Like I could have called that. Like you can see that inside of behavior and how things work. Mm. And our goals as a society and even towards sport are misconstrued. And this is why, we're using the things like, hey, movement and breathing. Why aren't we teaching these fundamental things? Because here at this highest level, they're not doing these things. And if they actually, these are just byproducts of why the psychology is off. Is because the goals have become to look past what's actually important and what's going to happen after a career when you're done. Oh, I don't have the skills to function in society. Everything's about winning.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to struggle hard. Yep. You're going to struggle real hard.
Hmm. What do you think on the positive side of, playing sports, like teamwork and camaraderie and,
all
in there. Trying something, with trying something new, like maybe you only played soccer and then all of a sudden someone says, here's a baseball bat, try this. And the kind of confidence that can build in a young person. And when do you think it shifts from those being the focus to winning?
When you get a kid who's really, really good at something, like top level, that's when it changes for them. Then when you get a group of kids that inevitably get to that kind of high school level where they get good and they, they could win a championship. This is where we start to see that spinoff occur. It's really kind of where, and the other part of this is when money gets involved.
Yeah.
You're not going to see a lot of the, you'll still see it, but once money starts to play a part of it, that's where things get, because winning becomes money.
Yeah.
Nike's not going to go sponsor the loser.
Right. I'm curious now, because you mentioned that you did skateboarding and BMX and stuff. And just the other night, I watched the 30 for 30 on Matt Hofferman. The BMX rider in Oklahoma.
Matt Hoffman.
Hoffman, thank you. I was blown away by, to the point you just made of like making money is when it kind of gets intense, and how he was pushing himself the whole way, because at the time BMX was not, the Gravity Games didn't exist or, you know, X Games or any of that stuff. And he was just pushing his body and hurting himself, like his spleen ruptured and all this crazy stuff. And I'm wondering if there's anything in your experience that kind of feeds into that psyche of an athlete, where they, it's not for money. It's really just for to be the first one to do something or to break a record or to push them, their own personal limits. Do you have any thoughts on that sort of aspect?
Certainly. I mean, I'm all for stuff like that. I know of Matt Hoffman. I know of a lot. I mean, I've worked with a lot of extreme and action sports related athletes.
Yeah.
I find them very interesting because they're not, although winning is at that, you know, that thing, you don't see the same things as you see in traditional sports.
Right.
You see kids, you see people who are trying to push the limits of what we think we understand. They're more like artists.
Yeah.
And I have no problems with a guy like Hoffman pushing himself to destruction because of what he loves and what he wants to do and accepting the consequences of that. When, as long as he's a, you know, like, I mean, he's largely a functioning human being, right? And is able to navigate space and people. Mm-hmm. And those are important things. And his peers. When we see, you know, like, I've always looked at action sports and extreme sports as what those sports are today compared to when I was a kid are so different. And when you go look at traditional sports, you don't see that big of a change. Why?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, like the things these kids do on bikes, skateboards, snowboards, skis, whatever. And I shouldn't say kids because a lot of them are adults, right? But what you see that they do and how big of a change has happened in the last year alone, I would argue you don't see those types of changes in 30 or 40 years, 1 year of extreme sports that you see in normal sports.
That's so interesting.
And here's the interesting part about it all, though, is we believe there is change, but we don't realize that change is largely a technological advancement. So when you've got a timing system that's different, you've got aid stations, you've got shoes that are better, you've got clothing that's better, right? Like all of these things have played a role and a part in sport.
Right.
If you go look at track and field and sprinting, the 100 meters, they at the, I think, two Olympics back, Andre DeGrasse, they had him dress up and take part in what Jesse Owens did in the 50s, meaning he ran on a cinder track, ran in the same shoes, same timing system, same everything, and he couldn't beat Jesse Owens' time.
Wow.
But he went to the Olympics and crushed his time.
Wow.
We're really not, what we're doing is we're advancing technology and medicine, but we're actually not. And this is why I'm kind of really harping on what we, you know, like, look, sports are fantastic. They saved my ass. They saved my life.
Yeah.
They probably saved most kids' lives.
Yeah.
Right. They're an important process for learning and understanding how to work as a team, to lose well, to win well, and how to pick yourself back up, how to deal with an injury, like how to deal with people. Like these are all things that should be happening with that, but they're not, because when a kid gets really good at something, they want to give that kid more comfort in order to make it happen. And I mean, there's plenty of books out there that have been written, there's books that have been written about how, and it's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember. There's a really important one. The sport gene, I believe, it's about how, the greatest athletes in the world don't come from money and fame. They come from slums. They come from hard ass living.
Yeah.
And they have to work their tails off in order to make it. And then when they make it, they're given all this stuff. And then we don't understand why they crash and burn.
Yeah.
And it's not, I'm not suggesting that you don't like give a kid a salary for making something,
right?
You know, like, no, but what are we teaching people along the way? And where are these fundamentals that are missing in all of this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And at the fundamental layer of all of this stuff is, hey, what sort of character you have? What have you learned? Like, how this kid, how is he raised? What does he understand? Does he understand body weight? Like, does he understand how to navigate his body weight through space? Does he breathe well?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are these steps that are going on? And how do we actually look at this and get an understanding, or get a kid or get somebody to understand the importance of this stuff? Because sport should just be a microcosm for what's going to happen next in your life. It should be that stepping stone for what's the next phase.
Yeah.
You're not going to be a professional athlete your whole life. I know one guy who's still doing it like that, and is, you know, he's approaching 60. And he's the only person I know of.
And a lot of these athletes, to your point, you know, they end up sustaining injuries and then they have to stop. And then,
yep.
You know, kind of like the
they're
world
in an identity
right now,
crisis.
We've all had to stop. So what do athletes learn through those injuries that maybe we can all sort of apply to this moment, or, you know, when there's tremendous setback that leaves you wondering, will I ever X, Y, or Z again? What have you found in the sports psyche is helpful to work through those things?
When things are going poorly, when things are getting exposed, when I feel like I'm spinning out, I've gotten to a point, meaning when I don't like what's going on. Like oh my God, we're being, you know, like quarantined. I can't go outside, or I can't go do the normal things. I can't go play my sport. I can't play with my team. You have to be able to look through all of that and see opportunity.
Mm.
And if you cannot see opportunity in any of it, you're being exposed to the holes that you have in your life. And that it just means it's a place to fill.
Yeah.
So if you can't get creative enough and understand, like, hey, I don't need to do anything. Like I've got all the tools I need right here with me. I just need to hold it down. Like, you know, I mean, monks give up everything they own. Like I go into prison. I go into San Quentin and I run a program there, and I do it with inmates, obviously. But, you know, I explain to these guys, I'm like, look, you know, there's a group of people who inevitably they decide at some point in their life, they are going to give up all possessions. They're going to move to the middle of nowhere, the mountains in the middle of nowhere in Asia. And they are going to isolate themselves, learn a breath practice, and meditate most of the day. And they're going to find enlightenment. And they're only going to eat maybe once or twice a day, routinely fasting.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between them and you?
Oh, gosh. I mean.
The difference between a prisoner and a monk is this. The monk made the decision to do what the prisoner was told what to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What do you want to achieve? What do you want to get out of your time? This is your time.
Hmm.
And the cure for anything is understanding. And the problem is that we as human beings don't actually want the cure. We just want relief. And unfortunately, that doesn't give us a cure. That just comforts us. And so we can go back to what it is we want, what it is we thought we needed, right? Versus learning about ourselves. And there's so much to learn about ourselves in that, hey, I could be moving around and doing things at home. I could be working out at home. I can be doing push-ups, sit-ups, squats. I could go for a run. I could go for a ride. I could shut my mouth and do all of that and learn how inefficient I am at moving oxygen. Then I can see how long it takes me to get a little bit more efficient. And lo and behold, you'll probably see some pretty interesting results pretty quickly. And you're going to start to see your sleeping change. You'll start to see your moods change. You'll start to see the whole system starts to follow suit. Mm. And it's not the breathe. And just when you start to think it's the breathing, it's not. Mm. It's you being a part of this thing called nature that we stepped away from. Mm. You're being in touch with yourself, and that's being in touch with nature. Mm. And this is what I think is at the fundamental of what we've lost in anything, whether we're talking sport or whether we're talking, you know, work or life. Mm-hmm. Our disconnection from ourselves is why we're so disconnected from what's outside.
Right. In the massive amounts of different projects, I mean, your website is just filled with stuff that you guys offer.
I know, it's a little confusing.
No. It's
yeah.
It seems like you, I mean, it doesn't seem like, I'm hearing you have a massive understanding of, you know, all these different parts that make us human, make us function, and how to optimize, you know, who we are. And I'm wondering if you find yourself working with a lot of people who the headline is, I'm very stressed, and it's because of my job. Mm-hmm. It's because mm-hmm. of work. And how do you
help? Every day I get somebody like that.
So how do you begin to help someone like that? Because, I mean, the way that the...
Yeah, I start them with a breath practice.
Breath, okay.
Simple. Yeah. I start them with a breath practice. Hmm. And I ask them, what do they do to take care of themselves?
Yeah.
And if they don't, if they're not moving at least an hour a day, meaning some form of exercise, that's secondary. Mm-hmm. So I set them up with breath practice. We show them what that is. Like, we've got a breath calculator that's free on our website. And then you can actually get an accurate assessment of how well you tolerate CO2. Mm-hmm. You can get a number of different breathing protocols to follow, and you can play with each and every one of those. And then you can start to apply the principles of things like shutting my mouth when I train for most of the time. I mean, yeah. 80%, at least 80% of the training you do should be with your mouth shut. Unfortunately, when you first start doing this, you're not going to believe me that that's what we're supposed to do. It's going to feel like you're suffocating. And that is just a sign that you don't move oxygen very well. Mm. And you are going to make incredible changes. And those changes are going to change your life. Yeah. They're going to change how your brain functions. They're going to change how you feel. They're going to change how you actually have relationships. Mm. That's what's important about this. And that's why I start people in that place. And so I can give people breathing practices like I did with a guy in Italy this morning. You know, he has COVID. He's been dealing with it, but he runs a company. Like, he's a CEO and he's still running the company and doing all this. And it's like, yo, we have got to get you into a consistent mode of using this so that you feel the difference. And we need you to slow down a little bit and listen to your body. The problem is the type A's and the people who work and, you know, like are stressed. We think, and this just falls right back in line with what I was talking about with sport. We think it's about more work and working harder. It is not. It's about working more efficiently.
Yeah.
And working with what you've got and understanding the difference. And we have ample opportunity to change our biology in a very positive way, but we haven't done that for a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
Meaning we're talking probably 1,000 years.
Right.
We've gone reverse, like our hair colors changed. Women's hips have changed. These are just factual things in evolution. Mm. Menstrual cycles have changed. Like, these are all things that we say are evolving, but I don't know that they're actually evolving, right? Men's BMI has changed. Like, it's gone down, right? Mm-hmm. Men used to be bigger, right? And they're not right now. But I don't know that like our jaws have actually receded and had made it very hard to actually breathe through our noses because we eat food that doesn't require us to chew it as much. You know, our ancestors had perfectly straight teeth. Perfectly straight.
Wow.
And that changed because we stopped chewing our food and started introducing kids when they stopped breastfeeding to very soft foods, even when they had teeth, which what are teeth for? To chew things.
Yeah.
So the jaw reacts to that by it's plastic. It opens up and widens up, and that creates space in the sinuses, which makes it easy to breathe. So there's all of this connection to everything and what we do and how we do it. right? And it's just like stress is at the heart of it because we want to work. We think working harder and working longer because what are we trying to fulfill? Like, look, we're in a pandemic. We're being exposed financially right now. Mm-hmm. Everybody, mm-hmm. right? Maybe we should reevaluate how we weigh in on something we use for trade, money. Yeah. Why is it so important to us? What are we learning about right now that's so important? And for most people that I talk to, my friends and family, I'm finding that I really am getting reconnected with people. And the amount of people I see playing with their kids right now.
Yeah.
My neighborhood was a ghost town before this. It's now this thriving area of like kids out playing with their parents, going for rides and, you know, hiking and, you know, I mean, everybody's maintaining their social distancing, but it's people connecting with their families again. This was not going on a month ago.
Wow. It's amazing to see it's amazing to hear you explain how all this stuff is connected, how it's affecting us now, how it affected us before as, you know, humans. So, I mean, your panel is going to be great. The psyche of sports. But I mean, you have a trove of information to share with people. This is, yeah.
I know
this is going to happen, Brian. I was like, you know what? Here comes another call with another really smart person who has all this perspective, and I'm just going to absorb it all and keep my mouth shut and breathe through my nose. It's been lovely. But I know that for me, as a, you know, someone who's sorting herself out in the world, and I move my body every day. I practice yoga. I've run marathons. Mm-hmm. I played sports my whole life. And the obstacle of that being a stress reliever and then trying to figure out how to, when I'm not moving my body, when I'm still, how to be cool and calm and collected, mm-hmm. that's been my struggle, is to find that balance of when I'm running and I'm exerting my body, I feel like I'm releasing something, but then I had a hard time being still. And the breath work, like you said, that finally clicked for me. And now I know even more about it, thanks to you. But it really is breathing. And I noticed that you have an app also for breathing. Shift State?
We did. We aren't involved with that anymore, but that was our development. Yeah. And it's a great place to start.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. Yep. So your panel is Psyche of Sports and it's going to be mm-hmm. online. Are you ready to stream? How are you preparing for that?
I guess. Yeah. I mean, I've got Zoom. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll be great. I mean, you're super passionate, so I think, I mean, it'll translate over the internet to people. I just learned so very much. And for folks that want to know more about you and your perspective and what you're working on, where is the best place for everybody to get all that information and what you're working on and how they can learn a little more?
PowerSpeedEndurance.com.
Sounds like it should come with a Gatorade on the side. There's a lot going
Maybe.
On there.
Yeah, that was actually the name. That was the name of my first book. So.
Nice. Oh, your first book. How many books have you written?
Three.
Good Lord.
Yes.
Yeah. And what's the most recent one?
It's called Unplugged.
Unplugged. Oh, that's exactly what I need. Great. Well, thank you so much, Brian, for taking the time to chat. My brain is overloaded with so much stuff in a great way. It's very inspiring for all of this. And the 320 Festival is lucky to have you. You're going to bring a lot to the panel. Thank you so much for taking the time to connect.
You're welcome. Thank you, Sarah.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.